Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech. My name is Chris. This show is called Nowhere to Run. You can visit Nowhere to Run's website at nowheretorun.podomatic.com, and there you can get all the archives for free. We hope to have a new website coming pretty soon. I'll let you know when that happens. You can write me via email at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at conspiracyclothes.com. That's Chris at conspiracyclothes.com. You can also write to me via snail mail at P.O. Box 1437, Gallatin, Tennessee, 37066. Okay, I've got a good show for you guys, I hope, this week. It's been kind of a crazy week for me, a little bit. On the road a lot with the band, which is nothing new, but on both ends. I got to actually leave here in just a few hours again, and it only gives you a few days to really get what you need to get done in the real world, and so that's kind of challenging, but it's also good, too. It really puts a lot of stuff into perspective, and, you know, in order to get as much done as you can, or what you need to get done anyway, you need to, or at least I do, have to write it down and really get after it, you know, and, like, cross out stuff and keep moving just to get it done, but I mean, it's a good thing, I think, but it also made it a little extra challenging this week because conspiracyclothes.com been shifting from one webmaster over to another, and the other is me, I guess, temporarily, which is entertaining and interesting. But it's also really good, too. I think it's a really good skill that to learn, and I've had time to learn it on the road. So, I mean, you know, I got little to nothing to do most of the hours of the day when I'm on the road, so I've just been trying to learn HTML and CSS and all those kind of things. But in the process of shifting one thing over, there's just a lot of stuff to do. But my point is that, and if anybody has been trying to buy any clothes at conspiracyclothes.com, it's a little in a transitional phase right now. The security certificate is expired. So you can still buy stuff, but you just have to pay with a credit card. I don't think, because of the security certificate, PayPal isn't working. So anyway, and also, in general, just while I'm talking about this, in general, I've been trying to, I guess, kind of change the perspective I had at conspiracyclothes.com and really try to apply just new principles to it, just kind of just biblical principles, I guess. Just, you know, I'm just trying to redo all the stuff like that I may have done wrong. I'm trying to refix, and I'm just really excited about it, but it is just currently in a transitional phase over there. But again, I think I can see why it's happening, because it's taught me to, you know, like the whole idea of learning the HTML and how websites work on the back end has been really great tool to add to the design aspect of stuff. Like, you know, I hope to be able to get some kind of job in that area, because it would be something I could do while I'm on the road and actually make money. You know, I could do that. I think I was just on Craigslist looking for potential jobs and stuff, and you know, I could do that stuff. If people were asking about, you know, we need somebody that can think of things. And it's like, that's what I can do. I can think of things. I can do that. I can think of things. And then, you know, I did apply to them. But then you, like, send them to conspiracy. You can go to conspiracyclothes.com. And I designed all that stuff on the website and the shirts and everything. And then they're kind of like, yeah, we don't need crazy people. So thanks. But you can also go to lovetheloft.com. I designed that website as well. But, you know, I designed most of the stuff for the loft over the years. But anyway, I guess that's kind of shameless promotion. If anybody knows anybody that needs any work done, I don't know what I would be good at. Design stuff for sure, and any other possible things you might be able to think of. But you can email me at chris@conspiracyclothes.com. That is shameless promotion. I just totally use this show for total shameless promotion. But and I'm sorry about that. It won't ever happen again. Maybe. Maybe it won't ever happen again. I don't know that for sure. But, okay, enough of all that. Let's get started with the show. We are going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back on the other side to get us started. So I'll see you in just a second.
You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. Now, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet that was given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who didn't know John Swinton, nor the press, offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. Now, he made the statement in 1880. Now, he went on to say that there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. And I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. He said the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? He said, we're the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. That sounds like Brian Williams and Katie Couric and Charlie Gibson, doesn't it? Now, when we talk about these paid minions of the press, these rich men behind the scenes that control them, are the real movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and the New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. So that's why I say it's time to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy, this New World Order, call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email when you get there, the email machine, and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Try to relax. This will feel a little weird.
I don't feel very good.
They didn't have any aspirin, so I got you some cigarettes.
Revere Radio Network Tampa, the worldwide home of free speech.
All right, here in the next few shows, I'm going to do a series or two on debunking Michael Tesserian. I know a lot of you probably know who I'm talking about with Michael Tesserian. He's a researcher and speaker on the internet and elsewhere, and he is one of these guys that is your leaders of debunking Christianity, and he is leading people to his school, which is basically his speeches and presentations are basically the advertising wing of his school, which is basically a regular Hogwarts where it teaches you tarot cards and astrology and the summoning of spirits and all kinds of stuff like that, and that's basically what he is leading everybody to. So he kind of gives you a picture, and to say that he's an objective researcher after seeing what he's offering in that regard is kind of a silly thing to make a claim to. I also think it may be noted that somebody who is, and I get this same thing with Freeman too, it's like they're the ones trying to, you know, they're showing us where the Masons are wrong and how they're evil religion and they're all magicians and they, but yet they are magicians too and they're just a different kind of magician. It's a black and white magic thing. I wouldn't understand that because I'm just a deluded, brainwashed Christian. But the enlightened people understand that there's a good and a bad magic and the Illuminati, they're bad magicians, but Freeman and Michael Tessarian, they've got it figured out and they are, they're good magicians, you see. Well, my contention with that is, hey, I'm all about following the evidence on that, but it comes down to your power comes from summoning spirits, basically, and it comes from your free will. So the only thing, so the burden of proof is really at this point on those people to show me where it is that you're that you can prove that the spirits that you summon are good and the spirits that they summon are bad. And where can you show me any evidence that these spirits wouldn't lie to you? Is there any evidence that these spirits must tell the truth? Do they have an agenda? Do you know the agenda? Do you think that they would tell you the agenda if they did? Anyway, I will try to back off that a little bit. But my point is, with Mike Tessarian, he's very slick, and he uses a lot of, like they all do, mixing in the proving of the New World Order and the Masonic agenda and the, you know, symbolism and all this stuff, and then interject the very vicious anti-Christian agenda. It's very obvious. I don't think anybody could claim to be objective in that manner. And what I think that his downfall will ultimately be is that, you know, you have to be extremely knowledgeable to present the things that he does, yet to make the lies that he does, it has to show a complete disregard for well-known history. Again, when you try to debunk the Bible, you're walking on real thin ice because you have to really know what you're doing to try to get away with it, because that book is solid and it is validated by secular history all throughout. One of the illustrations I love about it is like in Daniel, like chapter 11 is like one of the most specific sets of prophecies that lays out the entire history of the world. Basically, it's so solid of a prophecy. I mean, Nostradamus or any kind of channeling or 2012 or none of it as holds a candle to what this is. I mean, it's talking very specifically, naming, calling out individuals and their sons and their daughters. And so the only thing, and this is actually the beautiful part about it, the secular world doesn't even challenge the fact that it was written, you know, and the what they challenge is that it had to have been written afterwards. It's their only hope that it had, that it must have been written after those things happened, because it's not, you know, it's very obvious that it's very specific, but it's a downfall because Daniel is the most validated book of the Old Testament. I mean, you can prove via the Septuagint and a lot of things when exactly it was written. And, you know, there's copies in hand. You can't really do that. And I really like the story about Daniel where Alexander the Great spared the city of Jerusalem when he came through and saw what their God had written down. And again, it's important to realize that's how God has validated his Bible in many ways. I mean, as I like to point out, what Chuck Missler points out is that if God is God, he can get a message to us. And if he's sitting outside of our time domain, which he claims to be, and he's watching, he can see the beginning of time and the end of time, like sitting in a blimp at the Macy's Day Parade, you can see the beginning and the end. All he did was validate everything else he said by saying, this is what's going to happen. And what is it, 25% of the Bible is prophecy or something like that. And it's a large amount. It was prophecy at the time it was written. And he's betting 1,000. You know, you don't hear that enough. That look, if there was a prophecy that didn't come true, you would have heard about it. They would have been screaming that from the mountains. But they just kind of keep silent on that issue because it's 100% accurate. So, in effect, you have to be really careful when you try to make the claims that he does. And it's really easy to bunk Tessarian. In fact, he uses wrong. He quotes wrong, and the things that it's going to be fun because he quotes, like, he'll quote a verse that really sounds good for his argument, and then when you actually go look at it, not only is it in the wrong place that he said it was, but he took out the middle part of it, which you know clearly debunks what he just said. So it doesn't take away from the fact that people are believing it. I mean, Most people today believe that the Bible is just some quaint thing made up by a bunch of first and second century hoaxers. And that's just the common idea. When let me tell you, the people that are listening and care about this, never lose faith when it comes to the Bible. If you think you've heard something that disproves it, go and find for yourself. I guarantee you, when you look, you can put all your effort towards researching the real facts and find out what really happened, and you'll never be disappointed in the Bible. It all, every single time, blows everybody out of the water. Look, if Michael Tesserian was right and everything was just as easily disprovable as it was, you would have heard about it every night on the news. I mean, the reason that this stuff isn't mainstream, because if you don't think that we're in a satanic system, then you're deluding yourself. I like to point out to a lot of my secular humanist friends that believe the evolution argument up and down, is they always think that they're some kind of renegade, that they found out the truth and that they're running with it, and everybody else in the world believes this crazy religious dogma, but they've got it all figured out because they're so super smart and they're renegades. But they fail to realize, I think, that they are the system. I mean, that's what's taught word for word in every level of our government school system. The government is trying very hard to get you to believe what you believe, and they made you think that you're a renegade for believing it. It's a big mess, and so I just encourage people to have faith when researching this, because it rocks. I mean, every single time it just will surprise you. I could go on about that, but basically I'm going to be doing some series on Michael Tesserian. So if anybody knows anything that they'd want me to hit, or wants to just send me some email for badmouthing their favorite dude, you can do that at chris@conspiracyclothes.com. But I also want to encourage those of you out there that do research this stuff and realize the importance of debunking these main people, because so many people are falling for it. Write an article just debunking some of the silliness that we're all believing in, and put it out on the internet, put it on a discussion board, and publish it in that way. You'll just be so surprised at the reaction that you get, because people really need this, and they're searching on the internet for this kind of neo-apologetic stuff, because we're about to be hit with a great deal of deception. So we need to have people out there showing that it's true. And look, you're gonna be okay, because the truth is on your side. You can go to Chuck Missler for a lot of this stuff too. Chuck Missler's talked about just everything. He has literally done a commentary on everything, and he's always a good angle for some of that stuff. I always call it the the K House cross reference is a good thing to do, which is the khouse.org is his website, but you can just check on the internet for a lot of stuff he does if you're questioning other stuff. But there's tons of stuff. You don't really need anybody to debunk some of the lies that are being said all around the internet, and that are being believed by good people, and only because they just got their mind so blown that 9/11 was an inside job and the whole world is a big lie, and that everything that they've ever been taught and history is wrong and everything else. So they're just a fertile ground for all this other crap. So, we've got to put it in perspective for them, because it's a real battleground out there. So, and I hope that you guys would take up that challenge. What I want to talk about right now, and this is not really more for the conspiracy crowd, but for more of the Christian crowd, is something that I just figured out, or am in the process of figuring out, that has just blown my mind. I know I've talked before about this kind of weird thing that I've been doing lately, where I've just been... I've had a desire. I've been praying a lot. I pray a lot. I guess a lot of it started with Russ Dizdar, interviewing him. And up until that, I'd been praying a lot, really, really devoting myself and time to prayer. But ever since I've had that interview with Russ Dizdar and asked him how he prayed, and he told me the story about how he kind of used the Lord's Prayer as a template. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. And kind of took it piece by piece, and like when you'd say hallowed be thy name, that was the time to worship God and just sit there and praise God until you're done, which is actually kind of a fun thing to do, and I miss it now when I'm not there doing that. It's something I look forward to doing. It's weird how that works. I don't really have that figured out yet, but and then taking it, and then God gives you a time early on with giving me this day my daily bread, just to list everything. I know I said earlier in the show about how I made that big list of things that I had to do the other night, you know, just taking that list in addition to all the other things that I need and could think about and praying over every, you know, thing on the list that I need. I mean, I need help. We all need help in everything that we do. And here we are, you know, have an ear to the throne room of the universe. You know, I mean, here's a father who is as willing as a father in this world to give a gift to their son. You know, God wants to give you the things that you need as well. You know, and he's very, very, a very good provider. And he just wants you to go and ask him for it. I've been saying to my girlfriend lately, it's kind of like a purchase order, you know. It's like if God's like surveying the world and he just sees a purchase order and he reviews it, you know, it's like, oh, this is a prayer from somebody. Let me see, you know, review it. Okay, I'll sign that. And, you know, but if there's no purchase order, then he doesn't have anything to review. You know, I mean, if you need something, pray for it and it'll be, you know, put that purchase order out there. And what I've been finding lately, and this is just astounding me to no end, as I'm going further towards God, I'm like, just, I want to, I've been praying for faith and really just pouring my heart out every night, asking for faith and asking for, you know, all kinds of stuff, humility and all those kinds of things that one needs that can't really get on their own, I don't think. That. And you know, it's been a really wild experience because in the same time, like when I get to the point of like, you know, forgive me of my sins. I think that's important to say, you know, I really want to be convicted of my sins. I want to do your will. I want to turn from them. Convict me so I know to turn from them and then give me the power to turn from them. And okay, so I've been turning from sins. I've been like on this rampage of turning from things and I love it. I mean, I'm not doing it because I'm scared or I want to, you know, do this. I've been doing it because it's great. I mean, it's great. It's like exercising the little bit of willpower, and even, you know, initially with the harder things, because, you know, I was an alcoholic and everything else, and so those things were, you know, smoking cigarettes and everything else, you know, was hard to do, and it was kind of more of a physical thing, but it was the same principle applied. Like once you turn from it and you just get a little bit of willpower exercise there, that eventually it all goes away. It's like a spiritual mechanism. It resists the devil and he will flee from you is something I found to be extremely true. Like the whole power that it has over you to want it goes away completely. One thing I find to be probably one of the interesting things, I'm going somewhere with this, just hang out with me for a second. One of the things that I've found recently that I have been turning from or trying to is based on in the Bible it says, you know, I say, verily I say to you, even if you, I'm again paraphrasing, if you just look at another woman, you're committing adultery. And I've noticed that, you know, like any other guy, I mean, I, you know, have always just looked at women. It was just like a really thing to do, you know, and really analyzing that aspect of it and how much I do it and how I couldn't hardly stop. And it was such a drive and a temptation. It was exactly followed the same principles as, you know, any other sin. And I, again, I'm not encouraging everybody to do it. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, this is what I did. I one thing for one person is not as bad for another person or whatever, you know. But I think that the doing this has taught me something. And one of the things is, you know, to my girlfriend, I think it's amazing. Like, I don't think of any other girls now. My love and my desire for my girlfriend and hopefully someday wife will, you know, I consider, you know, I want to marry her. She wants to marry me. I think that we will definitely be married at some point, just, you know, trying to get a few things together. It's a little bit of personal tidbit. But, you know, I think that the act of like really committing to not looking at other women has like just increased so much my desire for her. And I just think about her and instead of anything else, you know, and it is still hard. I mean, but at the same time, it makes me look at people in a completely different way. Like, you know, responding to women now is like, you know, really looking at them in, you know, a loving way, like a love my fellow man kind of way at their face, you know, as opposed to anything else. And it's And again, that was a very hard thing to do, but then eventually that goes away too. And there's lots of things that us guys really, I'm sure women to a lesser extent, as far as what I'm talking about, have to, you know, turn from in regards of lust and things like that. But I will tell you, if you just, where I'm going with this is that there's other things too. Like I've had other major things and things that, just smaller things here lately now that I'm kind of knocking out some of the major things that I was doing wrong, like, you know, very obvious stuff, you know, and so now it's kind of just other stuff that I want to turn away from because I know it's harming me. Like, for instance, now everybody's just going to think I'm crazy, but this is what I mean by, like, I'm looking for things to turn from because as I become more obedient to God, I think it's all about obedience and not in a bad, like, mean man, obey me kind of way. It's like that's how he has the way to give you all this stuff. I mean, my prayer life is, like, so awesome now. I mean, I am just awed every day at the stuff that I pray for and I get. I'm not, like, getting stuff, but, I mean, it's like I get to lay down everything that I have worried about, you know? And everything that I need is no longer a problem because I have God, literally, I know now for an absolute fact that I can never turn from that God is a real and that he is listening to me. And I can't tell you how much that has strengthened me lately. I mean, it's like I can no longer... I've seen too much stuff happen in the last few months that have... I can never, ever say to my... ever again that I have a doubt in my mind about God's realness. And I don't think that... it's because of the answered prayers, but it's all part of it. As you grow in it and as he gives you the keys to the car. And he's such a good father. I mean, it's like, you know how you go to your dad's like, Dad, I need a loan, you know? Well, I mean, that's what he's there for. And especially in the times that we're going through, I can't stress this enough, how important it is to set up a daily prayer thing. And because we're going to a time where it's going to be so important for us to need miracles every day. I mean, the world is going to be, you know, if 90% of the population is going to die, most of us aren't going to be in that 90%. But those that aren't are going to be running for their lives. And it is only through the providence and miracles of God that we are going to stay alive and that we're going to be able to do anything at all good and to have any kind of resemblance of good a life. But again, remember that this life is not all there is to it. I was talking with a guy that I really just was trying to impress on it that his whole religion was predicated on the fact that you have to get as much out of this life as you can. And of course I can see your point. If you didn't understand as I do or try to that this whole world is not what I want. I mean, this is, you know, I see this world as a challenge to be able to overcome so that I can, you know, in the next world is what I'm looking towards. No eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has comprehended what God has in store for those who love him. And I have a feeling that God is trying to get us to learn something here so that we can become what he wants us to become. I don't think that we are presently on this world, in this world, what God wants us to be, but it's a stepping stone in order to try to be what he wants us to be. And I think that this is all just a process, and we it's not a test per se. It may be looked at as a test if you want to, but I think that's a little missing the point. I think that it's a process that we will need in order to learn how to be you know, the way he wants us to be. There's something that as a benevolent father that he wants for us that he can't just give to us. There's some things that you have to just find out and learn. And the path that I'm walking is the narrow path. And the path that is easy to walk is the broad one. And I'm not claiming that a lot of people are going to go down this path, but I'm here to tell you it's worth it. The closer you go towards God, the more the blinders are lifted off, and you're like, oh, man, this is great. I can see why all these crazy Christians were acting like this, because it's so amazing to have this power. And I mean power in the sense of sureness of this power that is in you, that I guess that's kind of in a way what the turning from sin has been about, is being able to have the Holy Spirit sit firmly in me without the as much overt sin and stuff that it just can't hang around because of its nature. I mean, I'm sure that it's still there, but it's I don't know how, it just isn't as connected somehow. And I just think that that it has everything to do with that obedience and the turning from sin is somehow the key to it. And look, when we pray, what's a big part of this has been the learning from Russ Dizdar, and I've been taking the course that he has, Confronting the Powers, and learning about this. And a big part of prayer is setting aside time to not only pray for the people that you need to pray against the evil spirits. If you think that there may be somebody that has dabbled in the occult, different have things, whatever, that may have demonic attachment, to pray against that demonic attachment in the name and authority of Jesus Christ, and to really attack it, you know, and to really understand that you have to be specifically attacking things. It's your post. You're here and you have this power, and it's not just to like have a halo on your head or to, you know, whatever. I mean, you're there. You have the power to use it, and the devil is in here usurping this power that's not his. He doesn't own this world anymore, but he's sitting there and he's destroying people's lives only because nobody is calling him out. And so you have to really exercise your authority that's given to you. The authority, the one who's in you is greater than the one who is in the world. And you have all authority to trample scorpions and snakes. And, I mean, you have authority over all of evil's activity. But, you know, it doesn't do any good to just generally pray, oh, God, destroy the devil type thing. Get after somebody in particular. Get after something in particular. Pray against evil. Pray against evil rituals. Ask for God to shine a light on particular rituals, that this whole system would be exposed and that people would begin to see that God would just, you know, really, really move in it. And pray for things like in the Shatter of the Darkness. Is it shatterofthedarkness.net, which I really encourage Russ Dizdar's site. I'm just really happy about Russ Dizdar. But one of the things that he's asking people to do, and I in turn ask you guys to do, is all the month of October, I guess we're about halfway through October now, to pray against the Bohemian Grove and pray against the geographical demon gods there, the demons being summoned, the rituals that they're doing. Pray against it in the name and authority of Jesus Christ. Take authority over that stuff and pray for exposure of it. Pray that, you know, people begin to see what's going on in there so they can see what their, you know, rituals are being done. And keep in mind, Russ Dizdar is, you know, back in the 80s was getting multiple personality people that were saying that, you know, it wasn't just mock human sacrifice as Alex Jones proposes at the Bohemian Grove. We've got insight that is a show. I mean, there's underground stuff at the Bohemian Grove. There is a lot of actual sacrifice and people being kids being hurt. I mean, I've had, you know, things recently just in the local area that I'm in. I mean, you can find out, and probably a lot of you, if you cared to understand how big this is, would find that most of the people involved in the higher echelon of your local society are probably multiples involved in satanic ritual abuse with their children. And I mean, it's that widespread that it's probably everybody that's, you know, I mean, not everybody, but it's a lot of people. This system, this world right now is so taken over by the satanic side. And and it's only going to get worse. There's going to be a ramping up of it. And those of you that have ears to hear, listen, we have to get stronger in our faith. We have to understand and be bold and understand what we have, what our power is. I mean, it does no good just to sit there because we're going to need it. And if you don't know that you have it, then you most likely won't use it. So, I guess that's my rant on that. Take a quick break and I'll be right back.
On Middle East oil. Probably not, but that should not be a reason. That's an old theory. It's mercantilistic. It's neocolonialism that you have to maintain your supply routes and your natural resources. But I think there's still a lot of those kind of people around, and they believe, you know, we were told it was about oil and jobs when it first started in 1990, and this is just a continuation of that war. Indeed, this war is a mistake. It was a mistake to go in. It's very costly, and it has a lot of economic ramifications. We're going broke. We have this huge deficit. We're spending nearly $1 trillion with maintaining our empire overseas, and that's a cost. Right now, we own foreigners $2.7 trillion. No wonder they have money to come back in here and buy stuff up, and then we object. But that has to do with our monetary system as well as our foreign policy. So if we want prosperity, we have to change our foreign policy. We have to live within our means, but we can't maintain a reserve currency where all our greatest export today are paper dollars. We create money out of thin air, and they still accept it as if it was backed by gold. And that is the reason all this money goes overseas, and at the same time, we finance all this military activity overseas. It's bankrupting this country. And not only that, it's a threat to our personal liberties here, and it's going to be a threat to our economy because we are beginning to live beneath our means. And that is a natural consequence of what happens when you live beyond your means. So we must change our policy both overseas and domestically.
Do you believe that, Senator Brownback, that we want Congress to attack strategic targets in Iran, nuclear facilities?
Absolutely. This idea of going and talking to attorneys totally baffles me. Why don't we just open up the Constitution and read it? You're not allowed to go to war without a declaration of war. Now, as far as fleeting enemies go, yes, if there's an imminent attack on us, we've never had that happen in 220 years. The thought that the Iranians could pose an imminent attack on the United States is preposterous. There's no way. This is just
an attack. Fleeting
this is just war propaganda. Continued war propaganda, preparing this nation to go to war and spread this war not only in Iraq but into Iran unconstitutionally. It is a road to disaster for us as a nation. It's a road to our financial disaster if we don't read the Constitution once in a while.
Around the horn, Congressman, moral values, but polls also show that voters look now, at least, to the Democrats to handle the economy. How are you going to win back their confidence in order? Congressman Paul.
Well, first, we have to have a sound economy, and we don't. We're overtaxed. We're overregulated. We work with a currency that is non-functional, and our prosperity is slipping. And we are overextended overseas. You can't have a prosperous economy at home when you're spending all the money overseas. You can't even have a strong national defense if you're spending all this money overseas in wars that we're not winning. So if we want a prosperous economy here, we have to change these policies. And we can't be bailing out farmers and subsidizing ethanol. This is just the wrong way to go. The taxpayers pay for the subsidies, and then they pay for higher prices when they buy the gasoline or buy the food. It never works.
Governor?
American people.
Time.
The right to unionize should be a basic right of any group. You should be able to organize. You should have no privileges, no special benefits legislated to benefit the unions. But you should never deny any working group to organize and negotiate for the best set of standards of working conditions.
Governor? Promise to support the nominee of the Republican Party next year.
Not right now, I don't. Not unless they're willing to end the war and bring our troops home, and not unless they're willing to look at the excessive spending. No, I'm not going to support them if they continue down the path which has taken our party down the tubes. I mean, we've lost credibility because of all our spending, because we have violated the civil liberties of all the American people, and we have adopted the Democrats' foreign policy. Why don't we run on George Bush's foreign policy of a humble foreign policy and no nation building, okay, and don't police the world? Then I'll support.
Let me try that by a couple of gentlemen.
All right, that was Ron Paul, the last CNBC Republican debate, and the editing job was a little weird on there, but there was all kinds of applause in between there. He just really torched everybody. It was funny to like watch the video because you see all these other people kind of hanging their heads and like, oh yeah, because it's really hard to debate Ron Paul because he's the only one up there that's not totally controlled by one means or another. He's the only one that can speak his mind. So I hope everybody that can come together on Ron Paul and we can vote him during the primaries. It's so important to go out there and register to vote. And in some states, you have to register to vote Republican in order to vote for Ron Paul during the primaries. But the primaries is where the big victory is going to come, because if they are hoping, and trust me, they don't understand what to do. This is out of their hands. They have never, in all these thousands of years of constructing this new world order, have been faced with such a problem as this man. And he seeks to undo what they've been working to do. And it's going to be, I pray for Ron Paul, and I encourage you all to pray for Ron Paul. I pray for to frustrate the power of his enemies. I just pray for his protection, and that God would just open new doors so that so many people would begin to hear him, and that they might be able to wake up to some of this stuff so they can turn from just these lies. But I do encourage everybody to pray, and I encourage you to vote in the primaries, because they're hoping he'll go away. But if he has the time between the primaries and the election, if they put anybody in place of Ron Paul where they actually have to pay attention to him in the media, it's over. They cannot have that. And so, but what I anticipate probably that's going to happen is that there's going to be a big, massive bunch of trouble that's going to come with these primaries, because it's going to be very obvious that he's going to have just masses of people, you know, lining up with Ron Paul. Every primary polling place will be a Ron Paul rally. I mean, there's going to be no doubt that Ron Paul is obviously the nation's choice. But yet they're going to have to make it look like he never even existed in these polls, the ones that are controlled by Diebold. So they're going to have and there's going to be a few of these polling places that aren't going to have the Diebold machines that are going to be like resounding Ron Paul victories, that it's not going to match up with the ones that say, oh, Ron Paul didn't even show up, even though everybody outside is voting for Ron Paul and he didn't even get like 0.5%. So it's going to be inconsistent, and the people are going to be like, what? You know, and they're going to demand receipts, and they're going to demand all this stuff, and it's going to be obvious that they've fixed something. So they run an incredible risk here with the Ron Paul thing. They're damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't, really. And they were hoping that he would go away, but he's not going away. And if you ask me, I think that God is doing this for a reason, to give us a chance to wake up here in this calm before the storm. And so I encourage anybody out there, please go register to vote, you know, and at least get this primary thing done. And make sure if your state, you can find out very quickly, you can find out if your state, you have to vote Republican or not. I'll try to find a link to that page where I've seen that linked before, and I'll put it on my page. It's a nowheretorun.podomatic.com. Again, you can email me at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at conspiracyclothes.com, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions or respond to anything that I've got wrong, because I am prone to getting things wrong. I'd like to thank all those people that do email me on a regular basis and give me information and stuff and corresponding and all that stuff. I really appreciate it. All those emails, because, you know, I mean, it's usually you guys are the ones that give me the ideas to do stuff. And thanks, Mark, for your support on the help for the website and your offers to help and all that stuff. So, well, while I'm on this kind of subject of political stuff, I like to say some funny stuff that happened. Over the weekend, we had a guy came with us on our travels, and he's a Ron Paul supporter, and he kept screaming out of the bus window, like when we'd be parked in front of the club as people were leaving and stuff. He'd be like shouting Ron Paul slogans at him and stuff, which I don't know if it was helping or not, but probably not. But one of the things he said I thought was quite funny. He said, Giuliani for Overlord, which is funny. I should make a shirt, Giuliani for Overlord. But actually, I do think I got a pretty good idea for a Ron Paul rock shirt that I hope to have in production pretty soon, once I get all this stuff figured out as far as, oh, I don't know, I got a number of things to figure out with that. But anyway, I do want to make a prediction here. I should put this on predicto.com, Zeph Daniels' multi-user blog area, which is really interesting. But I think, you know, with Al Gore just being what they gave him, the Nobel Peace Prize, okay, for his shilling about global warming, I think that what I like, he's, in my opinion, depending on what, I don't know, but I think that he is kind of like their magic bullet if they need him. And while I see that they are prepping Hillary and she was shaking hands at the Bilderberg group and everything, and I know that, you know, usually means that she is probably the chosen one for that, and I could see all kinds of reasons for that. But, you know, if it comes down to it, I could see them putting Gore in there in the last minute. And the reason that they need to put Gore in there in the last minute is, one, his global warming shtick cannot stand a serious debate, especially with Ron Paul, who was on Bill Maher. Bill Maher asked him, like, well, what about global warming? I mean, let me play that clip because it's important to hear it.
What about global warming? Are you on the page that there is such a thing as global warming?
Yeah, I think it's been around for a long time, and it's probably going to be here with us for a while longer. I don't think the ozone has settled on that yet. I don't think everybody knows everything about global warming, because you have reputable scientists on both sides of that argument.
No, you don't!
Well,
no, on the other side, you only have Professor Irwin Corey and the Shell Answer Man. I mean, the reason I'm bringing this up is to say, even as someone who I consider myself somewhat of a libertarian, I think there are some jobs that are so enormous that only the government can do it. And I would put, at this point in our very tenuous history, global warming in that list. Don't you think the government has to do something about global warming?
Well, then you have to deal with the volcanoes, and you have to deal with the pollution of China. So do you want to invade China to make sure they don't pollute? And what are you going to do about the volcanoes? They are all contributing factors to global warming. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do what we can to slow up the emissions and stop subsidizing big oil companies. I don't like subsidizing oil companies. They've been doing that for years. We go to war to protect oil so that we can buy more oil and burn more oil. So I would say our foreign policy contributes to global warming by subsidizing a policy that is deeply flawed, and that's why we're in the Middle East, to protect oil interests. So, yes, that would be one of the first things you could do if you're serious.
He does. The rest of that interview is great because Bill Maher's trying to really hit the points, like, so you want to get rid of the CIA? And Ron Paul's like, yeah, you know, just really tears him up on that, too. He's like, well, you said you thought we didn't need the Civil War. And then Ron Paul's like, yeah, we didn't. Bam, hits him with some history. And he's like, oh, well, anyway. So they were really trying, which they always try to do. It's like, because he says such controversial things, but that's their enigma. They can't question him about the controversial things, because then he'll tell them why he said it, and they can't have him telling the people the things that he will tell them if they ask him those questions. So it's just a really interesting thing to watch Ron Paul's interaction with the media, because they are just short-circuiting. But anyway, back to my point about old Al Gore. What I think that if they need him, they'll bring him in at the last minute, and you know, they'll use him as this Nobel Prize winner and everything else, and they has the smoking gun of he had won the election before. By God, he just deserves to be it. And so he is a smoking gun, but it also it helps to not have anybody be scrutinized for all this time that, like, you know, now everybody in the race right now has basically a year to be totally scrutinized, but that's great. A year of Ron Paul telling what he's got to tell. If we're lucky enough to get him past the primaries, will be the first time in history that this whole system is going to be exposed. I mean, that's exciting, because we need just such an exposure in order to save ourselves from imminent destruction. But keep in mind, they have already passed laws and worked overtime the past few months to make sure all the laws are ready, so that even if a pin drops, we will go into martial law and have a dictatorship. So if there is a bad enough storm anywhere in the country, Bush can declare himself dictator and never give it up, and we will never have an election. So, and we'll be in concentration camps, the whole nine yards. But something more major can happen to that. Another false flag terror event could trigger any number of things. Any kind of outbreak of pandemic of any kind of situation like that would cause us to be quarantined and put in quarantine camps and all kinds of stuff overnight. And it's legal now. It's legal for us to go into death work camps. And that's the American way. We've convinced everybody to do that. So, you know, we don't have a lot of chances here, but this is a chance. And Ron Paul is a chance. likely, if there is a chance at all, it's going to be through God and the help of things like this system that we have to work with, because the system really was built to protect against these people. You say what you want about the founding fathers being all a part of this or whatever. Something providential happened where they set up a governmental system that by its nature was designed to keep out the very same people who have eventually taken it over. And they had to work very, very hard at it. This was not how the devil would have planned this. You know, I mean, he had to jump through a lot of hoops. It took him 200 years to break the system, but it is now on the verge of breaking. But the difference is that we as American people still have been told that we still have the system, although we, on the books, don't have it. So, and liberty is written in our hearts, not on a piece of paper, or not in the laws you sign. Just because you've made a law doesn't make it real. The Constitution, if we still think we have it, then we do have it. You know, I mean, it's not gone just because they passed a law that said it's gone. You know, as long as their whole system is based on deception, you know, and us not even knowing that it's gone. So really, they're walking a fine line where if we ever get wind of this, then we will take it back. You know, I'm talking about Joe Sixpack and Sally Sixpack. You know, I mean, if the regular American people figure out what they've been lied to about, then they're not going to be happy about it one bit. And I don't know, honestly, you know, of course everybody can infer my position that we're in the last days before, you know, the great tribulation here. I mean, the great war that's about to happen, I think, is going to be this precursor, this Gog-Magog war, maybe something else. I don't know how it's all going to work out specifically, but I do know that these Satanists that are running everything are trying to manufacture an Armageddon, a bloody battle. Read what Albert Pike had to say about World War III, and listen to what he's saying there. And that is what is about to happen. And that's a very important quote that you need to know. Albert Pike, World War III. Google it, because at the end of this bloody, awful war, which they're going to pass off as Armageddon, they're going to bring their phoenix to rise out of those ashes. And that is what they want, as loyal to the dark side. You know, everybody isn't knowingly involved in it, but those at the top and those behind the scenes are definitely satanically loyal. And we need to wake up and realize this isn't a game, this isn't a joke. And, you know, I hear secular people that know that these people do rituals and satanic ritual abuse is real, and they just can pass it off as, oh, well, it's just another way of trauma-based mind control. The satanic rituals are just to really freak out the kids, you know, to really get them to split off as multiple personalities. I mean, we're at this level where we're now trying to somehow explain away Bohemian Grove and the things that we caught them doing, you know, the things that are they're busted doing, the rituals and mock or otherwise sacrificed to Babylonian effigies is a serious charge to somebody claiming to be a Christian or to take an oath of office that they obviously have other loyalties. I mean, just on the face of it. So, and having everybody explain, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter what we believe, if it's real or not. The fact is that they believe it, and that's kind of a secular way to explain away that, yes, they are at rituals. Yes, they do mock sacrifice and regular sacrifice, but, you know, it's not really to anything real. I mean, you have to, at some point, think, are these people stupid? Do they sacrifice their children because they're I don't doubt that they're deceived, but does nothing really exist? Do they really get no power from it? Of course they do. They're getting an extreme amount of power. I mean, hell, they're the people at the top of this world, you know. But I'm telling you, the money that you get in this world, the gifts that you're given from Satan are in themselves a curse. They are what will eventually destroy them as well. I mean, count your blessings that you are not one of them, or don't have the things that they have, or don't have those nice things, or you aren't you know, count your blessings that you don't aren't successful in this world if you aren't. And if you are, you know, I mean, it's not like that's all that bad. You know, I think a lot of people try to put that it's easier for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven as, you know, as hard as a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven as it is for a camel to pass through the eye of the needle. And people kind of stop there. But what Jesus said after that was, but what is impossible with man is possible with God. And that is why he sent a sacrifice, one that was a blemishless one. And it says in the first genealogy of Genesis, when you translate the names of those people's names in that first genealogy and you read them in chronological order, it basically states what the purposes of Jesus' life was. And that was, man has appointed mortal sorrow, but the blessed God shall come down teaching, and his death shall bring the despairing comfort. And that's pretty much what he came here to do. He came here to teach us, and he came here to be a sacrifice for us, to buy us back, so we would have the authority over all evil again, because we gave it away. And the minute we gave it away, he started making plans to buy it back for us, because he is a loving and just God. And it's amazing that the creator of the universe could have been any number of ways. His personality could have been bad, and we would have still had to worship him, people, if he was a bad guy, because he created us, you know. But we should praise him for him being good. That's the miracle in itself, that not only that he is good, but that I even recognize and I would want him to be good, and I would want him to be just. And I mean, that's amazing that he is what I would want him to be, and that is good and just, and that is worthy of praise. He's worthy of praise every minute of the day. And, you know, I encourage you to just start praying to him, asking him stuff, and, you know, trying to be obedient to him, not because he's going to punish you, but because it's your key to really getting the fulfillment of this beautiful life that we've given. This isn't all there is for us, but we can make the most of it, and we don't have to live this way. He's willing to help us out of every situation. He is such a great provider, and all you need to do is ask him and believe in him. You know that he did become a man, and it's just that easy. So ask him into your heart, and he's there, and all of a sudden you have the spark of the divine to guide you, and then from then on the law will be written on your heart, and you will begin to be able to use and love and understand, and the blinders will be lifted off. So okay, that's a little bit of preachy time here on Nowhere to Run today. Maybe we'll get back into some conspiracies and whatnot next week. But I'll keep my eye out on the email for emails from you guys. It's chris@conspiracyclothes.com. Remember to support this show. You can do that by praying for me. Any way you can, anything you can think of that I might need, I could surely use it. And let's see. I guess that's it. Thanks to everybody. Power to the people. All glory to God. I'll see you next week. Bye.